today, the killing of Ahmaud Arbery and what it tells us about race in America. In February, a young black man was shot dead in the street in Brunswick, Georgia. He had been chased by two white men while he was out jogging. The killing of Ahmaud Arbery would go on to be commented on by LeBron James, Joe Biden, and even Donald Trump. Last week, The Guardian US reporter Sam Levine unearthed a video of Ahmaud from 2017.
So this video is body camera footage. It's made from a camera that is attached to the chest area of a police officer. The video opened. It is broad daylight. You can see from the timestamp that it's early in the morning. It's about 9 o'clock. And this officer gets out of his car. He is in a beautiful park in Georgia. And you see a car in front of him. An African-American man steps out of the driver's seat.
What's your name? What is it? Ahmaud. What you doing out here, man?
He has a baseball cap on, a winter coat. He's not wearing any shirt underneath. He has athletic pants on.
What are you doing out here? You just chilling?
I'm chilling, bro. I'm rapping. I'm rapping in the car. Okay. To instrumentals.
Okay. That's fine. I'm just trying to figure out what's going on here.
The officer asks him for his ID. And the officer runs his license, and it comes back. There's no warrants out on him. The man who was stopped begins to become agitated. The man yells back to the officer, "Why are you messing with me? What's the deal here? Why are you stopping me?" So as this escalation is going on, the officer requests backup, and the second officer arrives on the scene. The second officer immediately screams at him, "Get your hands out of your pockets." Ahmaud Arbery does that. And this officer deploys his taser.
Keep your hands out.
I've already checked it for weapons.
The taser malfunctions. Nothing happened.
Aggravate my day. I got one day off a week. One day. Okay. One day off a week. I'm trying to chill on my day off, bro. I'm up early in the morning trying to chill.
I see. And I get that. I get one to chill too. But we get a lot of bad stuff that happens out here. We get gang and drug activity. We get all kinds of stuff out here.
My name tied up in any of that?
No, it is not.
After that, the officer gives Ahmaud Arbery his ID back and says, "You're free to go."
Lee Merritt, a lawyer for the Arbery family, says this video from 2017 shows the type of suspicion that young black men like Ahmaud face on a daily basis.
It was an incident in the park where he did not, where he was honestly brutalized by law enforcement, where he was targeted for no apparent reason other than what we said. The same reason that Ahmaud Arbery was killed was the same reason he was stopped in that park. It was the criminalization of blackness itself. They saw a black man alone in the park and said, "You know what? This appears suspicious."
From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, the case of Ahmaud Arbery and the question of justice for young black men in America. Who was Ahmaud Arbery?
So Ahmaud Arbery is a 25-year-old African-American man who lived just outside of Brunswick.
Kushbu Shah is a reporter who is based in Georgia and has been covering this story for Guardian US.
He lived with his mother in a predominantly African-American area neighborhood, and he loved to run. He was very athletic, very fit. Neighbors have told me that he would spend his days working out, running, and what he would do is run toward this white neighborhood called Shatilla Shores. And everyone knew it. He would wave to people. He would wave to neighbors as he ran by and say hi, even those he didn't actually know. He was born and raised in Glynn County. He knew it very well, and people knew him very well.
Do we know anything about what he was like?
So his dad, Marcus Sr., has said that he was just a really lovely guy. He was kind. He would give you the shirt off of his back. If you needed a dollar, he would give you a dollar.
He didn't deserve that because he was a very good young man. I can truly say that from the bottom of my heart. And everybody that knows him knows his heart.
He loved to make people laugh. One of his best friends, Akeem Baker, has said to many people that they stayed in touch for years, you know, and Ahmad would counsel Akeem, even though Akeem was off at university and Ahmad was at home just outside of Brunswick.
Ahmad meant so much to so many. He was a valuable person to everyone he came across. He was a person of love. And he was a bright light. He was a bright light in a world of darkness.
And so, you know, he was a very caring person, kind person. It seems like, you know, he was sort of a foundation for his family.
Take me to February the 23rd this year. From all your reporting, pulling together interviews with the family, police reports, CCTV footage, have you been able to piece together what happened in the lead up to Ahmad's death?
The day that this happened, it was a sunny Sunday. It was a bit warmer for February than most days. So it was a great day for running. And Ahmad, as his neighbor Lauren told me, whizzed by her house, ran about a mile over the causeway or the highway into Satilla Shores. At one point, he stopped to look at a house under construction. And he went in, took a look around, was there for under 5 minutes. And walked back out. And those are probably the last 5 or 10 minutes of his life.
Brunswick Communications, Operator Smith.
Someone had seen Ahmad stop at that construction site and immediately felt it was suspicious. They called 911 to report it.
And you said someone's breaking into it right now?
No, it's all open. It's under construction. And he's running right now. There he goes right now.
Okay, what is he doing?
That call happens at 1:08 p.m. that afternoon during his run, and we're not sure who made that phone call. And the 911 dispatcher asks the person who has called, well, can you tell me what he's actually done wrong? And the person can't answer that question.
Was he just on the premises and not supposed to be?
And he's been caught on the camera a bunch before at night. Kind of an ongoing thing out here.
But they do promise, the dispatcher promises the person, okay, well, we will send somebody to take a look.
Okay, that's fine. And you said it was a male in a black t-shirt?
A white t-shirt. Black guy, white t-shirt.
Then Ahmad's still jogging. And then 4 minutes later, presumably one of the McMichaels, and we're still not sure who it is, but I would guess it was the father, Gregory McMichael, 64-year Gregory McMichael, who used to work at the Glynn County Police Department 30 years ago, and then for a long time at the district attorney's office in the county. He calls 911.
911, what's the address of your emergency?
I'm out here at Satilla Shores. There's a black male running down the street.
Satilla, where at Satilla Shores?
I don't know what street we're on. Stop, what's that? Is it? Stop.
He yells to somebody, stop, stop, just stop. Presumably that is Ahmad.
Sir, hello, sir. Sir, where are you at?
One of the McMichaels is not speaking to the 911 dispatcher, but you can hear the noise in the background.
Hello?
And the 911 dispatcher stays on for about 5 minutes, listening for any sort of confirmation that, where are you, how can I help you, but that doesn't come.
Gregory and Travis McMichael later said they suspected Ahmad for a recent string of burglaries in the area. So they grabbed some guns, got in their truck and went after him. Another man, a neighbour called William Bryan, joined them in that pursuit in a separate vehicle. The McMichaels told police that the chase ended in a confrontation in which, they claimed, Ahmad Arbery tried to wrestle Travis McMichael's shotgun away from him. Ahmad was shot and killed in that struggle. Why are there no charges brought at that time?
Gregory McMichael is a former police officer and just retired just under a year ago from the district attorney's office, who was first in charge of the case. And immediately she told the police investigators and officers that there was no reason to charge them with anything or to arrest either McMichael. But within 4 days, she recused herself from the case and suggested it be handed off to George Barnhill from a neighboring county.
George Barnhill, the prosecutor who took over the case, also found no reason to arrest the McMichaels. He explained that decision in a letter to the Glynn County Police Force. It had to do with Georgia's citizen's arrest law.
And so he says it appears that their intent was to stop and hold this criminal suspect until law enforcement arrived, which under Georgia law is perfectly legal, he says. And that law says a private person may arrest an offender if the offense is committed in his presence or within his immediate knowledge.
In his letter, George Barnhill also referred to Ahmad's prior convictions as evidence of his aggressive nature. Ahmad had previously faced charges for choplifting and was put on probation for carrying a gun into a high school basketball game years earlier. But there's no evidence that he was involved in recent burglaries, as the McMichaels had suggested.
He then says that it appears that Travis and Greg had firearms, and because Georgia is an open carry state, they're allowed to carry them. So then he says that the McMichaels were acting in self-defense because Arbery allegedly strikes Travis and tries to grab the shotgun and pull it from him. I think at this point, they expected this to be signed, sealed, and delivered and sort of put to bed.
And that seemed to be the end of it. But Ahmad's mother, Wanda Cooper Jones, was not about to let this go.
I never believed that he was burglarizing anything. They told me that. I questioned it. But then when the articles start coming out that he was actually killed in the street, that really, really raised a whole lot of concerns.
Her own investigations uncovered a potential conflict of interest. That prosecutor George Barnhill's son had worked in the same Brunswick District Attorney's office as Gregory McMichael, the father involved in the killing. She pressured Barnhill to recuse himself from the case. So in came a third prosecutor, but still it sat on the shelf until early May, when suddenly everything changed.
Tonight, video has surfaced of an African-American man being chased down and killed. His family says he was just out jogging.
This cell phone video captures the final moments of Ahmad Arbery's life while he was jogging through this Brunswick, Georgia neighborhood in February.
It was a 36-second video of the shooting leaked to a local news website that lifted the lid on what had happened to Ahmad. A video that prosecutors already had in their possession. It showed him dressed in shorts and a t-shirt jogging down the road. And then it showed the McMichaels waiting for him, using their pickup truck to block his path. He tried to run round them, but ended up in a tussle with the younger McMichael before three shots were fired. That's when Ahmad stopped, stumbled, and fell forward onto the ground.
The video changed things so dramatically because it contradicted what the McMichaels had told the police. It changed the entire narrative and the entire story that the family had been told, that Ahmad was involved in a burglary.
Do you remember watching the video for the first time?
I do. I actually did not watch it for the first day. I've just, you know, after having covered so many of these, Freddie Gray, Trayvon Martin, Tamir Rice, Philando Castile, Alton Sterling, Walter Scott, Keith Lamont Scott. I mean, the fact that, you know, there's just so many and I could still go on. I hadn't wanted to watch it. But obviously, of course, that's part of the job.
What was the reaction to that video?
In the days after the video was leaked, the outpouring of support and grief for the Arbery family was immense.
It looks like murder. It looks like vigilante behavior that should be charged and criminalized.
Some of the responses from high-profile politicians suggested the crime had echoes of Georgia's uncomfortable past.
And this was a lynching of an African-American man.
And I've asked the Department of Justice and Bill Barr to investigate that and open an investigation into the police department there, the DA's office there, and a civil rights violation and investigate whether there was one.
Everyone chimed in from, you know, Democratic candidate, former Vice President Joe Biden.
Well, it sure looks like murder to me. At a minimum, it needs a thorough investigation. Black mothers shouldn't have to worry when their sons go out to walk down the street or jog down the street, that this could happen to them.
LeBron James, one of his Ahmad's coach for his high school football team, football players, American football players, like the New Orleans Saints safety, who chimed in with a happy birthday to Ahmad, because soon after the video was released, Ahmad would have turned 26.
Happy birthday to Ahmad Arbery. Rest in peace, King.
President Trump also mentioned Ahmaud during a news conference.
I think it's horrible, and it's certainly being looked at by many people. I'm speaking to many people about it. I saw the picture of him in his tuxedo. It was so beautiful. I mean, he looks like a wonderful young guy.
His friend, Akeem Baker, whom I mentioned earlier, one of his best friends, he organized a run on what would have been Ahmaud's 26th birthday, and had asked people to stop at 2.23 miles to represent February 23rd, the day that Ahmaud was shot, and thousands of people sent in videos with the hashtag #IRunWithMaud.
So this morning, I got up and ran my 2.23 miles to run with Maud.
Happy birthday, brother. I run with you, my man. That's right. Let's go.
Today, I run for you, Ahmaud. You are a bright light, and your name will not be forgotten.
Hey, had to stop, catch my breath. We out here for you, Ahmaud. You got to stand for something or you fall for anything. Rest in peace, young man.
I got a white T-shirt on. Giving my condolences to Ahmaud, Aubrey, and his family. That story hit me because I jog a lot. And I never thought about that my life can just taken away from just jog. Jog was trying to supposed to prolong my life.
I mean, obviously, the reaction has been different because we're in the middle of an international lockdown. So people are finding ways to make a statement. But the reaction has been huge, and there have been outdoor protests with people wearing masks and gloves.
What do we want? When do we want it?
Now! What has it meant for the case?
Well, what this has meant is that there's been some very swift action.
As all of you are aware by now, yesterday evening, agents from the Georgia Bureau of Investigation effectuated an arrest on two individuals, Greg and Travis McMichaels, charging them with both felony murder and aggravated assault in regards to the killing of Ahmaud Arbery.
Think about it in these terms, for over 70 days, there was nothing happening with this case. The case was essentially resolved in the eyes of the DAs who were in charge of it. When the video came out, within 36 hours, the McMichaels were arrested and booked into county jail. That should tell you just the impact that video has had on the case and how it has affected what his parents are looking for in terms of justice.
It's a numbness I've seen with most families when something like this happens where, you know, it's not even something that's been fully processed. I don't think it fully gets processed for about a year because you're caught so much in the attention and what's going on and, you know, everyone in your face and everyone wanting you to talk about it and talk about it and talk about it. I don't think families get to process it and then it really hits them.
L. Chris Stewart is one of the lawyers representing Ahmaud Arbery's mother, Wanda Cooper Jones. He's represented a number of families of unarmed black men who have been killed by police. Alton Sterling was one.
There's late news tonight about a fatal police shooting captured on camera that sparked outrage and protests in Baton Rouge. The death of Alton Sterling, shot while being pinned down on the ground.
Another was Walter Scott.
Headlines, former police officer Michael Slager now sentenced for the fatal shooting of an unarmed black man after a traffic stop.
Those were police shootings, but tell me what they have in common with this case, in your mind.
The aggressors, you know, the person who started the physical confrontation, ending up killing someone, and then, of course, trying to argue that they were fearing for their life. You know, you can't claim self-defense if you started and initiated a violent confrontation, which the McMichaels did. You know, you can't track someone down, chase them with your truck with shotguns and 357s and threaten someone with deadly force and then claim self-defense when they defend themselves.
When you watch that video, what do you see?
A kid getting hunted, shot three times. And killed because he just happened to be running down the street at the wrong time because a person who, for whatever reason, felt that seeing a black guy running down the street, he must have done something, deserved to be chased.
What went wrong with the case? I mean, we had a situation where it was 2 months before this video emerged and nothing was done.
I mean, it just shows the total unprofessionalism that happens when decision makers are potentially biased. And I mean, it shows. Just look at all the emails and letters from those two district attorneys and the horrific, scathing letters by Barnhill attacking Ahmaud's character and giving opinions that totally contradict the video. I mean, it's insanity.
I mean, tell me what his arguments were.
Oh, I mean, he was just saying that this was a citizen's arrest, which was ridiculous. You know, right now I hear Georgia thinking about getting rid of the citizen's arrest law because it's a way for vigilante justice to happen. I mean, that's not really what it was created for. It's really created for situations long time ago where, let's say, someone's in a store, a grocery store or something, and a robber pulls out a gun and is robbing the cashier. You tackle them and hold them on the ground until the police arrive. You know, it's not meant for pursuing people who haven't done a felony, and you track them down and shoot them or shoot at them. I mean, even mall security or store security can't pursue you outside the store.
I mean, one of the things that seems quite frustrating is that, as you have pointed out and as Kushboo has pointed out to us, these cases just keep on happening. We keep seeing injustices faced by young black men again and again, and there's a huge reaction in each of those cases. Do the systems change as a result? Have we seen improvements?
Well, a lot of times things keep repeating because we only focus on the fifth of police involved situation. We focus on the officer that's involved and want him fired or arrested or whatever. We don't look up the tree at the people that are in charge of reprimanding that officer or training them or teaching them the mentality that they should have. And so that chief or that internal affairs head or whatever it is doesn't change or, you know, holds that position for decades. And the problem has never been fixed because we're just focusing on the low-hanging fruit on that.
What do you see when you look up the tree?
No, I've seen everything you could think of. I mean, I've seen internal affairs departments that are in charge of reprimanding officers for small incidents like slapping someone when they shouldn't have or punching someone or something like that. Never reprimand an officer ever, which leads to that officer escalating their behavior over the years and escalating it because they think they can just get away with anything and then ended up killing someone. Which is why in this case, this is so important that those district attorneys are held accountable for any improper behavior that they did.
Is this something that you believe is systemic?
Yeah. The biases that we have when we see somebody of another race making immediate assumptions, especially African Americans, that if they're in your neighborhood or maybe your store, that they are taking part in some criminal act. So you have to take action yourself. You know, this wouldn't have happened if Ahmaud looked like Mr. McMichael's son.
Behind this, behind these cases, these absolutely terrible cases where somebody dies, is this a kind of systemic thing in terms of the way that black men are perceived in many different situations, this idea that they must somehow be the aggressor?
Of course. I mean, you know, I've been in a store somewhere where I'm not in a suit or how I typically would be dressed. You know, I may have just come from working out or somewhere and have gotten extra attention from staff, and they have no earthly idea that I am who I am. So that's why this case struck a chord with me, because, you know, I live in an area that's predominantly white and I go running often. And what if someone assumes that I did a crime or did something and comes running after me or, you know, driving after me with guns? I'm going to defend myself. So if this is allowed to happen without them getting some significant jail time, then, I mean, you know, we're going to turn into the Wild Wild West.
Coming up, what the video unearthed by The Guardian last week shows us about the experiences of young black men in America. But first, we are really excited to be nominated for 3 British Podcast Awards, and there is also a Listener's Choice Award. If you like Today in Focus, we'd be unbelievably grateful if you would consider voting for us. Go to www.britishpodcastawards.com/vote. It's super quick. And thanks for the reviews. Do keep them coming, especially if they're nice. Sam Levine, you're a Guardian US reporter and you've been covering this case. This weekend marked 3 months since Ahmaud Arbery was killed. The McMichaels are now both facing murder charges. And last week, a third man who we mentioned, William Bryan, who filmed the killing, was also charged with murder. And it's not just them. The failures of the prosecution are also being scrutinised at a state and federal level. There is now a fourth prosecutor on the case, an African-American woman from Atlanta. Clearly, it appears that a huge injustice has been done. And I want to ask you about that 2017 video that you unearthed with a public records request. We've just heard from a lawyer for the Arbery family, L. Chris Stewart, about how he too attracts suspicion at times while doing completely innocent things like going to the local shop. Isn't the significance of that 2017 video exactly that? It underlines that point that to simply be black for many people is to somehow be suspicious.
I think so. I think it shows that what happened to Ahmaud Arbery in February of 2020 was not a one-off. It was part of a larger context in which he was viewed with suspicion. He was treated differently because of the color of his skin. And Ahmaud Arbery's lawyers have pointed out that there's been a lot made of the fact that Ahmaud Arbery went into this construction area in the neighborhood where he was shot, suggesting that he was trespassing. But his lawyers have pointed out that there were white people who did the same thing. There were lots of people who went into this area under construction. And Ahmaud Arbery is the only one who has drawn suspicion for doing that.
Sharing videos of black men getting harassed or even killed, some would say could be exploitative to the subjects of those videos and certainly traumatizing to people watching them. But in this case, and in several others, it seems to be the only path to any kind of justice. How do you weigh those potential effects when deciding to publish something like this?
I thought about that very carefully when we were weighing whether to publish it. It's disturbing to see, police treat a black person or any person that way. And I didn't want to put something out there that just for shock value. But I thought that there were 2 really important elements to this. The first is that one of the suspects in the Ahmaud Arbery case has very deep ties to law enforcement in the area. You know, he worked as a police officer in the same police department that was involved in this stop and would later work as a district attorney investigator. The fact that we had found a very controversial interaction between Ahmaud Arbery and that police department years earlier, I felt was important to show. Second, I thought it was important to hear Ahmaud Arbery speak to understand the exasperation he felt at being harassed by police. It showed us the context in which he interacted with law enforcement in the area.
I mean, but does it make you think that if this one video that you've uncovered shows this happening to this young man who then gets killed in 2020, that there may be many, 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 many other videos out there showing similar things and far more incidents in which this has happened?
Well, that's the thing I can't stop thinking about is, you know, for every Ahmaud Arbery that's caught on video, how many people are there where there are similar things that happen to them that we will never find out about? And I think the visual element just helps draw attention to the importance of this case and can make people understand it in a visceral way that's very hard to without it.
When you take it all together, the previous experience with law enforcement that you uncovered, the prosecution's repeated failure to act, what appears to be racial profiling by the McMichaels, how might all of this been different if Ahmaud Arbery had been white?
Well, I think if he was white, it's very difficult to believe that he would have attracted the amount of suspicion that he did in this neighborhood jogging by. Would neighbors have been so concerned about a white person trespassing that they would have reported it to the police? Would Travis and Gregory McMichael have felt it so urgent to get in their truck and drive down and chase him before confronting him? If he had been killed and shot dead in the street and it was a white victim, would prosecutors have felt more pressure to bring charges? It's very difficult to believe that the case would have evolved the same way if this was a white victim.
Sam, thank you very much.
Thanks.
That was Sam Levine, L. Chris Stewart and Khushbu Shah. Do go to theguardian.com to read brilliant reporting on this case from across the Guardian US team. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Sam Colbert. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.